Mahanidana Sutta, the greater causes discourse. This discourse appears on long length saying, Digha Nikaya. This is the 15th discourse. First part is the dependent co-arising. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was living among the Kurus. Now the Kurus have a town named Kammasadamma. There Venerable Ananda approached the Blessed One and on arrival, having bowed down to the Blessed One, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "It is amazing, Lord, it is astounding how deep this dependent co-arising is and how deep its appearance, and yet to me it seems as clear can be." "Don't say that, Ananda, don't say that. Deep is this dependent co-arising and deep its appearance. It's because of not understanding and not penetrating this Dhamma that this generation is like tangled skin, knotted ball of string, like matted rushes and reeds, and does not go beyond transmigration, beyond the plane of deprivation, woe and bad destination." So the hell and all those things, people can't escape because of not knowing this. If one is asked, "Is there a demonstrable requisite condition for aging and death?" one should answer, "There is." If one is asked, "From what requisite condition do aging and death come?" one should say, "Aging and death come from birth as their requisite condition." So you can see that from the birth, there is this aging and death. If one is asked, "Is there a demonstrable requisite condition for birth?" one should answer, "There is." If one is asked, "From what requisite condition does birth come?" one should say, "Birth comes from becoming as its requisite condition." So this becoming is this bhava. So there is this three, there are two types of power. First one is this kamma power, or being as action. And there is this uppatti power, that the being as reappearance. So being as reappearance is the one that Buddha is later was explaining, that it is that that one would be born in a plane of desire, one would be born in plane of form, and one would be born in formlessness, plane of formlessness. So that depending on the concentrations that they have developed. So sensuous desire is the plane that we are living in. And then the Brahma world, and then there is this Brahma world, that the space is infinite, consciousness is infinite, so those planes. So the kamma bhava part is that the activity producing good leads to this kamma bhava. Activity producing bad, that is punyabhi sanskar and apunyabhi sanskar, that lead to this kamma bhava. And then activity producing unshakable, that aninjabhi sankar, lead to this kamma bhava. So there are two parts. The basically when
what is the unshakable one?
That is that apunyama aninjabhi sanskara. Yeah. Punyabhi sanskara, apunyabhi sanskara, aninjabhi sanskara. So
this unshakable ones, which are the skill states of mind, or
they are skill state of mind. That is means that if you develop the arupa dhyana, then they are the ones. So the so punyabhi sanskara, or the activity producing good, is that you do the skill states, develop skill state like meditation, also giving alms and sort of thing, good things. So they have this producing good results. And in that list, the arupa dhyana, although there is a concentration, arupa dhyana is not sort of included. And then the next one is the apunyabhi sanskara, the activity producing bad, that means that killing, stealing, so those bad things will lead to that. Aninjabhi sanskara is that unshakable one, that means that you have meditation developed up to the level of, the space is infinite, consciousness is infinite, there's four arupa dhyana level, those are the ones. So they are leading to this come about part.
As each come has a consequence.
Yes, come has a consequence. That is, if you look at this Nibbedika Sutra, and Buddha said that it has a result affecting here and now, or the next birth, or subsequent births. So karma has that its effect. But you can dilute those effects by doing good things. It's like that, let's say that we have some sort of bad things we have done in the past, but you keep on doing good things. So because of the good thing is quite a lot, the other one is remaining, but it can't actually come to.
Sort of suppressing, isn't it?
Suppressing. You are carrying that one until it goes away. It's like that if you get a stone and put it into the water, just it sinks straight away. But if you put these stones to a ship, right, keep on putting those on, so ship will sort of go down a little bit, but still it carry that one. So the ship is sort of compared to a skill states, kusala, one would develop. Yeah. So whatever thing we have done.
And in the same, sorry, I disturbed that. In the same way, can it happen to the other way too? And if somebody has done a very strong bad karma thing, and can it suppress the good karma that the person has done?
Yes, you can. Because that, because the unskilled states are very high,
yeah,
and then his skill states are little, yeah, small, then it can. It's
but
like
one state, the skill state, the other, when the other, the bad things are sort of completed or something like that, then that thing can come up. The good thing can come out.
Yeah. So you get out of hell, for example, because of those things, that bad things are gone and then the good things are coming up. So we
doesn't matter how long it would take to.
Yeah, the karma will take that its own time to get rid of, but the skill states are really big. That's why the kusal or skill states can be shared. Unskilled state you can't share. Having killed something, you know, sort of thing, then say, I got this bad thing, bad come and share, people that you have to pair yourself. But the skills on, that's why you even invite deities, you know, the Anumodanvitva and so on, that they share these merits and sort of thing, because it's big. if one is asked, is there a demonstrable requisite condition for becoming, one should answer there is. If one is asked from what requisite condition does becoming come, becoming is the existence, bhava is existence. One should say becoming comes from clinging as a requisite condition. So clinging is upadana here. So you can see that there are four, that the sensual desires, kama upadana, and then the clinging to duty and virtue, clinging is that silabhata paramansa. And then in the view clinging to views, ditti, and clinging to self, attavadupadana. So those are the four. So that whatever sensual desire, that is whatever pleasing objects, and thinking about those things lead to these sensual desires. If one is asked, is there a demonstrable requisite condition for clinging? One should answer there is. If one is asked from what requisite condition does clinging come, one should say clinging comes from craving as its requisite condition. So there is this craving as the condition for clinging. So there is this kama tanha, or the sensual desire, and then the clinging to existence, bhava tanha, and clinging to non-existence is vibhava tanha. So those are the three kind of craving. If one is asked, is there a demonstrable requisite condition for craving? One should answer, there is. If one is asked, from what requisite condition does craving come? One should say, craving comes from feeling as its requisite condition. So, there's this six kind of feeling. Feeling born of eye contact, feeling born of ear contact, feeling born of nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. Those are the the fix its kind of feelings. If one is asked, is there a demonstrable requisite condition for feeling, one should answer, there is. If one is asked, from what requisite condition does feeling come, one should say, feeling comes from contact as its requisite condition. So, the contact is this eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact and mind contact. So, whatever is the contact, that is, contact is the meeting of the three, that we got the eye and there is form, and we see the form from the eye, so there is eye consciousness arises. Meeting of the three is called contact. So it actually, its function is to meet the three. If one is asked, is there a demonstrable requisite condition for contact, one should answer, there is. If one is asked, from what requisite condition does contact come, one should say, contact comes from name and form. So, as its requisite condition. So, you can see that the form is the four great elements and the things derived from that one, like sounds, smell and all those things. And then the name part, the nama or name part, has got the feeling, perception, volition, and then there is contact and attention. So, there are five things. So, you can see there are sort of mental content, that there's this feeling, depending on the contact, I get some kind of feeling, pressure, displeasure, neutral feeling, and then I perceive that feeling, and there is this volition regarding the feeling, what sort of, whether I cling to that feeling, you know, that the coordination of the feeling and perception together. So volition plays a big part over there. So this volition is the one we were actually talking about before, that the activity producing good, activity producing bad, and so on. So there is this contact. So contact was the condition for having this feeling, perception and volition. And having got that, we have this manasikara or the attention. So for example, we have attention to this listening over here, and then we are hearing some sort of sound, and then there is that attention. And if someone actually opening the door over there, so then there is this attention. So you can see the attention tune our eye, you know, tongue, body as well, and the mind. Then if someone is coming over there, then we will turn. So that we have tuned our things so that whenever something is happening, the attention is there first, and having got the attention, it's actually say which base to use. I'm using, you know, I'm not actually looking at that one from the ear. Ear got the attention, and then the coordination with the mind, that this eye will turn and look at that one. So you can see the switching of the bases occurring depending on
the attention is manasikara.
Actually, every Dhamma occurs because of manasikara. If there's a discourse in that explains Satipatthana Sutta. So, because of the nutriment for the body is the edible food, and then it goes with the contact for the feeling, and for the Dhamma part is the attention. So any Dhamma that arises because of the attention, manasikara.
But that's not harmful until you think.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, but the attention is a really valuable thing because it direct, like the ship that going in one direction and then that one actually turning in this way, like that rudder in a ship that it turns. You know, if one.
That means the attention gives the direction, what sense to be switched on, or both, or what the combination you have to use.
You don't get two combinations.
For example,
only you get one.
For example, if somebody comes, I may hear as well as I may look at.
Simultaneously. It's happening, first you actually heard something, right? And then you are looking at, when you are looking at, you are only looking at it, you are not hearing. So when you are hearing, when you are, it's switched off, in the sense, these sixes are not working. You know, five is not working at once. sort of thing. So because the consciousness does not arise like that. Only one is switched on. Even in the TV, you are watching the TV. It's when you are looking at it, when you get the picture, you don't hear. It's the sound is actually behind, little behind the picture.
Mm.
Because the scientifically also it is the case.
Mm.
So, if one is asked from what requisite condition does name and form come, one should say name and form comes from consciousness as a requisite condition. If one is asked if there is a demonstrable requisite condition for consciousness, one should answer there is. If one is asked from what requisite condition does consciousness come, one should say consciousness comes from name and form as a requisite condition. So you can see over here, Buddha is, now normally Buddha is gained consciousness is because of the volitional formations, right? Now Buddha is stopping at this particular point. So there is a loop from the consciousness to name and from to the consciousness. But there is this the past and present sort of condition over here that when you say volitional formation, it's again, it's the volition we are talking about, sanskara. Hmm? So it is the one that is constructing the consciousness. So volitional formation, volition, name and form, got the volition. So what is significant over there? But Buddha is, with his super knowledge, he can see, if he wants to put it in this particular way, he can put it in that way. So it's the knowledge. So the former habitual tendency and led to the construction of that consciousness. Mm-hmm. Thus, Ananda, from name and form as a requisite condition comes consciousness. From consciousness as a requisite condition comes name and form. From name and form as a requisite condition comes contact. From contact as a requisite condition comes feeling. From feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. From craving as a requisite condition comes clinging. From clinging as a requisite condition comes becoming, that is existence. From becoming as a requisite condition comes birth. From birth as a requisite condition, aging, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, despair come into play. Such is the origin of this entire mass of suffering, mass of stress or mass of suffering. So Buddha is always saying, it is not just the form that arises, it is the mass of suffering that is arising. It's matter, feeling, perception, all those things, it's a mass of suffering all the time. We tend to not call it as a mass of suffering, we tend to call it as a body or the form and sort of thing. In one discourse, Buddha said, whatever arises is the suffering that arises, whatever ceases is the suffering that ceases, not the form, not the feeling, the whole thing. Aging and death, from birth as a requisite condition come aging and death. Thus it has been said, and this is the way to understand how from birth as a requisite condition come aging and death. If there were no birth at all in any way of anything anywhere, it implies of devas in the state of devas, of celestial in the state of celestial, of spirits in the state of spirits, of demons of the state of demons, of human beings in the human state, of quadrupeds in the state of quadrupeds, of birds in the state of birds, of snakes of the state of snakes, or any of any being in its own state, in the utter absence of birth, from the cessation of birth, would aging and death come to be discerned? These things has to be sort of contemplated thoroughly and sort of look at, will there be any aging and death if there is no birth? We sort of take it as a granted, but these statements are really big on its own. If you...
And it's the other way also the same, because when there is a death, so there is going to be a birth if you don't get the enlightenment.
Yes, yeah. For that is for the person who knows about the dependent origination. But simply, anyone can see, if they think about it, if there is no birth, there won't be any aging and death. The condition is the birth. So the birth is the biggest one out of those suffering.
Yeah, if someone doesn't establish that one, very hard to go beyond this.
Yeah.
Because if we, this is the base point for anybody, go beyond this point.
Yeah, but this particular statement I am saying, when we actually read it, it is different if you go to higher concentration and sort of see the statement that this, because of the birth, there is this aging and death. Because we used to this phenomena, you know, all the time that the birth, dying, you know, we used to it, so we just don't think about it. So Buddha is going in this detail because it's a really valuable thing to see in a meditation. So the question is that if there is no birth, would there be aging and death? No, Lord. Thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for aging and death. It is birth. So next one is about the birth. From becoming as a requisite condition comes birth. Thus it has been said. And this is the way to understand how from becoming as a requisite condition, or you can probably say existence as a requisite condition, so sort of it's a better word, comes birth. If there were no existence at all, in any way, of anything anywhere, that is sensual becoming, or from becoming, or formless becoming, the form becoming or formless becoming, rupa, arupa. In the utter absence of becoming, from the cessation of becoming, would birth be discerned? So, no, Lord. Thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for birth. It implies becoming. So, this existence is sort of difficult to see. That's because that normally you see the birth is there and then the clinging and all those things. Unless someone sort of contemplate very heavily in high concentration, one wouldn't actually see this. Because of the existence, there is this birth. So, if we take a simple example, let's say I sort of eat certain kind of food. And each time when I eat that, let's say, pleasurable ones, good ones, then let's say you are putting some sort of a coin set aside, you know, I got a pleasure out of this one, so $1, you know, another pleasure for something, another dollar, something like that. And this is some sort of a pot, kind of a pot, but this pot is a sort of a special kind of a pot. Its walls are also made of these 5 aggregates of thinking. So it can be enlarged as much as you want and it can be shrink as well. So let's say a person is just keep on adding these coins. We do. Everyone is doing this sort of thing, right? So at the, let's say up, then you die. After death you can see this thing exists. That pot exists with these coins. Why do I collected these coins? For some purpose, right? So then in that purpose is now coming to play. I collected this one for these things. So I want to use it. So how would I use it? So since I put $1, when let's say I was eating hoppers and I put $1 over here, right, then I want to use that $1 back to buy hoppers in the sense. So I want to have such and such a birth suitable for me to use that coin. In the Brahma world, you can't use that coin. No value. But in the human world, yes. But if you are lucky, if you have good coins as well, then you can actually have a human form and have this sort of a birth where you can actually buy hoppers and eat. Otherwise, you've got to be a, you know, an animal or creature, a preta or something that can use. That's the scenario. So one would sort of say that over many years, many thousand years, you know, that I am accumulating these things, keep on accumulating these things for the purpose, some sort of a purpose. And then that one is actually my intentions are coming back and I'm holding into those things and have such and such birth.
So Preta doesn't have a form?
They do.
But not made of 5 elements?
4 great elements.
4 great elements.
Yeah. They are. Whatever the subtle forms are, the form is always made of the 4 great elements or the derived out of this one.
So they cannot be seen any.
Well, you can see with your supervision. If you have a higher vision developed, you can see. I have seen many. They have really huge bodies. Some are very tall, they're taller than this temple. And they at the top end, very thin. And in the middle, it's huge stomach. They walk very slowly with that huge bodies. And because they got a very small mouth. And they live on the merits that you pass on. So they are the only one. So who can actually get those merits that we pass on? Other realms, they can't. Any other, the divine or the human. As you can't get any merits given by anybody else. But you can be happier. And because of that, you becoming happier. You can get merits. But you cannot otherwise. So
there was one of the girls with us at the hostel when we were in year 7-8, and she, maybe now I think she said the truth, because she, at that time we thought she was telling these things to get attention. She said to us she mentioned it as Mahasona, and she describes the thing that she is like that.
Mm.
She said that's a very, very big person, very tall and huge legs and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to tell that she could see them.
Mm. Oh, I have seen many in the meditation. Becoming. From clinging as a requisite condition comes becoming. Thus it has been said. And this is the way to understand how from clinging as a requisite condition comes becoming. If there were no clinging at all in any way of anything anywhere, it implies clinging to sensuality, clinging to precepts and practices, that is the duty, virtue and duty clinging, clinging to views, clinging to doctrine of the self, in the utter absence of clinging, from the cessation of clinging, would becoming be discerned? No, Lord. So there is this sensual desire, clinging. So we took one example, hoppers or whatever thing, you know, the pleasurable things. And there is this, the virtue, duty and virtue clinging, that let's say that you consume this, you know, the hoppers and all those things, and you are earning money and you are happy. And then you hear that that such and such a person or king or someone, he live like this, right? And then how is that I am here like this, and how is that person? So then you hear that because of his virtue and the things that he has done before. And so then there's this clinging to virtue and then the duty. By doing this particular thing, let I be born in those such and such a world have these things. And the third one is the view clinging. And that's really the dangerous thing. That is that if you have a sensual desire, take the sensual desire. And if you apply internally, then it is the sensual desire for the internal, then you get a view, that view of the self. If you apply it outside to the external objects, the same sensual the sensual desire you have, then this my-making, that is mine, this is mine, that is mine, and so on, my-making is happening. So then that view become tightened, we grasp into that view, we hold that view thoroughly. Sometimes we fight for that one, you know, because of certain views, and the people are fighting for religions as well, right, because of their views.
But if we cling to the Dhamma, the Buddha Dhamma, that is correct clinging, the correct view?
Well, it is okay to cling to the Buddha Dhamma at the beginning, but that is only for crossing. It's like a yacht, that you use that one to cross the flood and get out of that one. When you go to the other shore, you leave this one out and go away. So it's a parable for a raft. The Dhamma is like that one. First you cling because you see that one, this is really nice and sort of thing. And having gone into the higher level of concentration and so on, eventually you need to leave that one out as well. It's just you use the Dhamma to afflict yourself. You know, the people who are actually running with a stick to jump up. Like that one, you use this Dhamma as a stick. So you go up, right? On the top of that thing, you need to let it go and jump it to the other side, right? Likewise, you need to use it only to uplift yourself. Clinging to that one is not good. And we'll be coming that one to this one. This can be a very strong thing as well later on. And then people fight for things as well because of that. It's called machirya and stinginess. We will see later on as well. In the utter absence of clinging, from the cessation of clinging, would becoming be discerned or learned. Thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for becoming. It is clinging. From craving as a requisite condition comes clinging. This, it has been said, thus it has been said. And this is the way to understand how from craving as a requisite condition comes clinging. If there were no craving at all in any way, of anything anywhere, craving for sensuality, craving for becoming, craving for non-becoming, in the utter absence of craving, from the cessation of craving, would clinging be discerned? No, Lord. Thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is the requisite condition for clinging. It implies the craving. So, we can see that craving is the cause of this whole mass of suffering. Craving. From feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. Thus it has been said. And this is the way to understand how from feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. If there were no feeling at all in any way of anything anywhere, feeling born of contact at the eye, feeling born of contact at the ear, feeling born of contact at the nose, feeling born of contact at the tongue, feeling born of contact at the body, feeling born of contact at the intellect, that is mind, in the utter absence of feeling, from the cessation of feeling, would craving be discerned? So because of the feeling, we get the craving. So you can see this, Buddha said, the feeling born of the contact at the eye. So the feeling is something to do with this eye contact, or the ear contact, the nose contact. So the external object is actually giving rise to this particular thing. But this related to eye, nose, tongue and the body, so those elements over here. Thus, this is the cause, this is the reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for craving, that is feeling. Depending on craving, now craving is dependent on feeling. Seeking is dependent on craving. Acquisition is dependent on seeking. Ascertainment is dependent on acquisition. Desire and passion is dependent on ascertainment. Attachment is dependent on desire and passion. Possessiveness is dependent on attachment. Stinginess is dependent on possessiveness. Defensiveness is dependent on stinginess. And because of defensiveness, dependent on defensiveness, various evil unskilled phenomena comes to play. The taking of the sticks and knives, conflicts, quarrels and disputes, accusation, divisive speech and lies. So, now we start with the feeling. Because of the feeling, we get craving. Various kind of craving. If you eat something and it's tasty, so there is this craving. And what do you do when we have craving? We seek for that. Seek for that, right? So, pariyesana. So, this, that is that food, you can sort of easily see that we get this thing. Then you can have another example where you have this furniture, for example. You need examples to work with this one. So, if you get furniture, if you see some furniture somewhere in somebody else's house, and it's really nice, you sit down on that one and sort of see it's comfortable, and then you say, So you probably ask that person, from where did you buy this one, you know. So I had a thought that I want to have that sort of thing. Now next time you go to Harvey Norman or whatever place and then look for that one. You don't actually see it at once. So you are seeking that one. And when you seek that one, there is this acquisition. Acquisition means that you actually did not get it right now, but you saw it in a corner. That particular furniture is there. having seen that one, then so that is called labang or acquisition. When you get that one, then you are doing a decision making. Well, this particular furniture, is the size is right, the color is right, it matches my curtains and so on.
Right.
So, because of that, so desire and passion. So having, when you decide that this one is sort of matching and sort of thing, well, that is the selling man also approach at that time. He knows that they want to buy this one. So the chandaraga, or desire and passion occurs. And then there is this attachment to that thing, right? If somebody else is coming to buy you also, you are trying to get it before them, right? Because there is a competition, maybe one piece. And then there is this possessiveness, appropriation of that one. So that I want to have this appropriation lead to another problem as well. It's called my making, and then there's the perception of pleasure also arising out of that.
That's the worst part, isn't it?
That's the worst part.
You can leave that good in the shop, but you go home with a lot of things.
That's right.
Before acquiring.
And then that leads to stinginess, machiriya. So this machiriya, the stinginess or meanness, it can be because of five things. First one is the regarding the dwelling, the houses, whatever thing we are living. That is the stinginess regarding that. And also about the family, kula, family. And third one is the gain, labha, whatever the gains. That maybe that was a sale price or their sale tag on that one, you know, the $100 or $1,000 less than that one, so the gain. And then the reputation that one would get. And then the fifth one is the doctrine, Dhamma itself. You can have the stinginess to Dhamma. When you have that, then what you get is the defensiveness. That, let's say that same furniture, you actually take it home, put it in a nice place, and the small child is coming up with a pen, you know, to write something, and you take the child away and, you know, like that. So there's stinginess because it's new. Later on it will maybe different. And so that child example is simple. You know, that is not going that far. But if you acquire your property, your house for example, right? We've got houses. And then there is this stinginess. No, this is my house. That I live with, my family live and all those things. And this somebody is coming over there to break it, what would you do? If you have a weapon and you have capable of, you know, destroying that person, one would destroy it. You can see at this stage, if there is this stinginess, do we have five precepts? That's the question one has to see. We have five precepts as far as nobody is actually attacking us.
It's like if you say, I don't tell lies except when necessary. How would one be stingy with Dhamma? Or stinginess in Dhamma?
Aren't they going to kill each other because of the Dhamma? I'm from such and such a religion, right? Saying that I'm from this religion because of the, you are attacking my religion, I'm killing you. It's happening in front of your eyes. So it's going up to that level. So all the killings and stealing, all those things are happening because of this. The stinginess lead to arakko, defensiveness. The defensiveness is the one actually creating this thing. And if you put another example, let's say you have a small baby at your home. Let's say you think that you have five precepts, and a snake is coming to attack the baby, and you got a weapon in your hand, some sort of a thing, right? Would you allow the snake? So you can see at that time you would kill. So the five precepts, those precepts are actually for arahants. The others try to protect it, you know, that the maintain it. But given circumstances, one would behave the other way around.
Not only that actually, because even though, let's say that for an example, it's a monk. but live in the jungle. But if an animal come to attack that person, I'm sure that person would choose something.
Well, Buddha said, "For by no means don't do it.
Yeah.
Even that person die at that time, not doing, he'll be born in a good world, right?
To
by doing it,
something like that, you should be in a very high state.
Yeah,
like
but you can see this is coming from the top.
Mm.
Hmm? What was the cause over here? The feeling that I have about something is not feeling about that particular object itself. It's growing. It's something, right? So you maybe have craving for food, and so you are going to living in a house. Now this, the pipeline over here will create this issue. So it's a really bad thing. We are not actually thinking about this until Buddha tells us that about the stinginess. I mean, you have stinginess for, we have stinginess for houses, really, anyone. For family?
Yeah, and oneself too.
Well, and then the gain, whatever the gains you have, going to get. And then the reputation, I have developed such and such a reputation. And the dhamma, doctrine. And there is this thing.
That's what happens even though with the, maybe somebody is with the, in the path of to understand Dhamma and everything, but you wouldn't realize that how much qualities you don't have until that time comes.
That's right.
And then you see that you are the best person there, but when somebody says something against you, that's where your inside come out.
Come out, yes. Yeah, the internal things coming.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that is why, Lisa, until you get at least to a stream into a state, you are always vulnerable to some
these
sort
things,
of undecided, unexpected things.
Yes, yes. Because that we regard these things as mine, that's the bigger thing. This I am, this feeling is mine, and sort of thing. Yeah. And this is the way to understand how it is that because of defensiveness, various evil, unskillful phenomena come into play. The taking up of sticks and news, conflicts, quarrels and disputes, accusations, divisive speech and lies. If there were no defensiveness at all, in any way, of anything anywhere, in the utter absence of defensiveness, from the cessation of defensiveness, would various evil, unskilled phenomena, the taking up of sticks, news, conflicts, quarrel, disputes, accusations, divisive speech and lies come into play. So we take the knife and all those things because of this, because of this. And you can see that the bombing of the other countries and all those things, the defensiveness. You attack me and so I'm coming and attacking you. No, Lord. This is the cause, this is the reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for the coming into play various unskilled phenomena, the taking of the sticks, knives, conflicts, quarrels, disputes, accusations, divisive speech and lies, defensiveness. Defensiveness is depending on stinginess, thus it has been said. And this is the way to understand how defensiveness is dependent on stinginess. If there were no stinginess at all, in any way of anything anywhere, in that absence of stinginess, from the cessation of stinginess, would defensiveness be discerned? No, Lord. Thus, this is the cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for defensiveness, that is the stinginess. So, similarly, Buddha repeated that one back to the complete chain condition, the stinginess, attachment, possessiveness, desire, passion, ascertainment, acquisition and seeking. Seeking depending on craving. Thus, it has...
So, when in the Pali version here, and when we are talking about dependent origination, we used the Pali word used is paccaya. Now here, when we are describing here, it is the word with paticca.
Yeah.
It's two different words or same meaning?
Well, the it has the same meaning. Because of this, that one comes.
Yeah.
You know, that the condition is the one we are talking about, the condition.
Mm-hmm.
always we are talking about the condition, from this condition, that one. So if you are putting it the other way around, I think the Bhantek probably can explain this. The Pali has got this way of, even in Sinhala language, we have a way of saying, that's sort of a verbal thing.
It's like because of this happens.
That's right,
it's the shown the connection of because this is done, the consequence is like that. The chain goes like
that. We need to understand only this is the condition. Not the, the cause is sort of not general one. It is for you want, but the condition is always there. For it is generalized to, a condition is a cause that is generalized to everyone. So for example, I might like a flower because of some sort of qualities that I have developed before. That one is hetu or cause. Right? And then the condition is that, so another person may not like that one at all. Because that the flower did not have that quality that he is looking for. But from if you take a feeling is the condition for every craving. So it's generalized to everyone. Anyone get it there from that way. If you look at in a greater detail, that from the feeling that you get the craving, and then the at the end that defensiveness lead to unskilled phenomena, the stinginess, defensiveness, and that one. If you meditate on the stinginess part, that you can see that most of your bad ones, like anger sort of thing, will be suppressed. If you think about the feeling part at the beginning, if you cut it from that level understanding, with understanding, you are not cutting the link, I'm cutting feeling. You use the perception. You sort of get rid of the craving part. You are not going in the chain because that you are not continuing in the craving part. The bottom part of this link, you can see if you are cutting down on that one with understanding. Well, I have stinginess for the house. I have stinginess for this one. Stinginess is bad, sort of thing. Then you are not fighting. You are not shouting. You are not angry. So you can see the top part something to do with the craving. The bottom part is something to do with the anger. The taking up the weapon sticks and all those things. This is the cause. Seeking is depending on craving, thus it has been said. And this is the way to understand how seeking is depending on craving. If there were no craving at all in any way, of anything anywhere, craving for sensuality, craving for becoming, craving for no becoming, in the utter absence of craving, from the cessation of craving, would seeking be discerned? No, Lord. Thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is the requisite condition for seeking, that is craving. Thus, Ananda, these two phenomena, the chain of conditions leading to this birth, aging, all those things, as a duality, flow back into one place at feeling. It's going back to the feeling, whatever thing that we have on this side. From contact as a requisite condition comes feeling. Thus, it has been said. And this is the way to understand how from contact as a requisite condition comes feeling. If there were no contact at all in any way, of anything anywhere, it implies contact at the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. In the utter absence of contact, from the cessation of contact, would feeling be discerned? No, Lord. Thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is the origination, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for feeling. It implies contact. If there's no contact, we don't get any feeling. We've got to have the eye, we've got to put the form, and then the eye consciousness, meeting of the three, should be there to get the feeling. So contact should be there to have the feeling. Contact, from name and form as a requisite condition, comes contact. Thus it has been said, and this is the way to understand how from name and form as a requisite condition comes contact. If the qualities, traits, themes, indicators by which there is a description of name and name group, that is the mental activity, were all absent, would designation contact with regard to form group be discerned? So designation contact is this the mind factor. So Buddha is asking if these properties, features and signs, if they or all those things are not there, would we actually recognize something? So in other words, then now if I know about a chair, for example, by this chair. How do I know about this chair? How do I know this one is a chair?
Because,
yeah, my parents or somebody actually told me that this is a, you know, that it's a chair. Then, when I see a chair, I would sort of designate this one as a chair. Because I had some qualities regarding it. And so I see the features over here, that this sign, this is up over here, this is flat surface and down four legs and sort of thing. Since I had those things in my mind group or the name group, nama, so I would designate it. And again Buddha is asking, if the permutation signs, themes and indicators by which there is a description of form group were all absent, would resistant contact, actually the proper word would be sensory reactions rather than the resistant contact, sensory reactions with regard to the name group be discerned? No, Lord. In other words, if I do not know the object, if I do not know that this object, the chair, right, if I do not know that one, because that nobody has introduced me to that one, by the super knowledge or whatever thing, I do not know either. Like a child who does not know anything. A ball, if you give a child a ball, rubber ball, who has not actually used this one before, that the baby would sort of try to eat it first. Because that he is using senses to find out that one, and then he understands this is not something to eat, right? And then he understands later on that this is for playing.
So to know that the chair is a chair, do you always need to use the mind sense basis as well as the other ones? So I see a chair, I see something, and then is there a mental contact that lets me place the name chair to?
Well, no, we are talking about the other way around now. No. The previously we were talking about we know about the chair because we heard about something, you know, some properties, some signs that there is in my mind. Therefore, when I see, then I recognize it as a chair. Now, the Buddha is asking, if I do not know about this thing, that means I have never heard about this thing. I do not know anything about it. So, if I see this such a thing, would I designate that one?
And there wouldn't be any original formation about that?
Nothing, yes. It's a really fundamental, this paragraph you need to read about 10 times or 15 times, these two paragraphs is really valuable thing. So, this is, we are talking about the Adivachana Sampassa and Patika Sampassa. Patika Sampassa is that sensory reactions that are happening from eye, ear, nose, tongue, and the body, not the mind. The Adivachana is that the mental one that we designate from the mind, a chair, a person, a woman, a man, and so. So, if you take that baby's example, and it's a ball, baby does not say that one is a ball. Does not know to say that one is a ball, right? So there is no this adivachana or the mental thing about it. So he would not designate it. So that's why if you look at their behavior, it's totally different to, about unknown objects. So if I do not know, then I do not label it. No labeling. Since I know about it, when I know about it, means I know in a stupid way. Because I grab some features over here. This part is so-and-so, that part is so-and-so, this part is some sort of a color and sort of thing. And having got that one, then we say that this person is beautiful, this person is ugly, this person is a woman, this person is a man, and so. The whole thing is occurring with that one, our own designation.
The same thing that we do actually when we go to the mass supermarket or a food place, so we don't try to eat everything or get everything because we don't know what we know.
Yes.
And
there are certain things we just look at, we don't actually even think about
think
that.
Think about that, yes.
Yes. Don't bother reading the label sometimes because we do not know. Right? Yeah. So it's all happening. So that particular thing that we do not know, whether that one actually stingy or that it's poison or not, does not matter. If it is not appearing in the supermarket next day, it also does not matter. But the thing that we eat, well, that got to appear over there. Otherwise, there is a problem and price got to be low for those things as well. So every stinginess, everything is coming up with that. So if the permutations, signs, themes and indicators by which there is a description of name group and form group, nama rupa, all, were all absent, would designation contact, I mean that would be translated, better translated as a grasping at the idea, or resistant contact, that is the sensory reactions, be discerned? So there won't be any sensory reactions or the grasping of the idea if the all those things are absent. If I don't have these signs, features and all those things about that, don't like that supermarket example, there won't be any grasping about that object. And there's no mental reaction, the sensory reactions to that one as well. No good. So, thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for contact. It implies name and form. From consciousness as a requisite condition comes name and form. Thus, it has been said. And this is the way to understand how from consciousness as requisite condition comes name and form. If consciousness were not descent into the mother's womb, would name and form take shape in the womb? This one has to be understood. It's sort of difficult to translate over here. It's not that consciousness is coming, going sort of scenario here. As another translation actually says, if consciousness were not developed in the womb, okkamisatta is the Pali word, in the Sinhala is a sort of a better understanding you can get as even nobasneena. Not that this woman is going, it's nobasneena in the Sinhala word. Descend into the womb, would name and form take shape in the womb? No, Lord. If after descending into the womb, consciousness were to depart, so you can sort of get a wrong idea over here because of the English, that it is something that coming and going, right? It's not that one.
Is it to say that in the womb, consciousness is already formed before?
No, the consciousness gets established over there. That's what is happening.
So your brain is already programmed at that level?
Not the brain is programmed. Yeah. No, the consciousness is a sort of a pure thing in that on its own. At that time, and so with the consciousness that the growing those things are happening, so
consciousness is the seed for that
seed type thing, yeah. So how it works, you know, it's beyond our comprehension and explanation, is that the consciousness gets established in the mother's womb, and if it is not getting established over there, not getting developed, so it's that means that with the cessation of that thing. So, if after descending into the womb, consciousness were to depart, would name and form be produced for this world? No, Lord. This the Pali word is okkamitva okkamisatta. Sinhala sort of says better way, it's a basa pahavannena. Yeah, so you can see the language issues here. If the consciousness of the young boy or girl were to be cut off, would name and form ripen, grow, and reach maturity? No, Lord. Thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for name and form, that is consciousness. From name and form as a requisite condition comes consciousness. Thus, it has been said, and this is the way to understand how from name and form as a requisite condition come consciousness. If consciousness were not to gain a foothold in name and form, would a coming into play of the origination of birth and aging, death and stress in the future be discerned? No, Lord. Thus, this is a cause, this is a reason, this is an origination, this is a requisite condition for consciousness, name and form. This is the extent to which there is birth, aging, death, passing away and rearising. This is the extent to which there are means of designation, expression, delineation. This is the extent to which sphere of discernment extends. The extent to which the cycle resolved for the manifesting discernibility of this world, name and form together with consciousness. So the delineation is that the nature of self So all the expressions, Buddha said that the designation, expression, delineation, all those things, this is the extent. Because of the consciousness, you know, getting in this to form, name and form, and then, you know, we go up to this stinginess, killing, stealing, and all the bad things that people do. So, I mean, quite a lot Dhamma up to this level. I think probably we can stop over here and then continue next week on the rest.
Before we conclude up, I have a small question. Probably I didn't have proper understanding of how this the all sort of name and form comes back into the rebirth thing, but it is quite clearly established here, and we are certain things we are talking about, for example, in this life, and it is telling us how we pass into the next life,
mm-hmm.
Particularly the way this consciousness is established based on the karma we are doing, and then that form the next birth.
Mm-hmm.
It is the way it is explained here, isn't it?
Yeah, the remember that at the beginning I was saying the karma, the bhava or the existence has two things, the karma bhava and upapti bhava.
Yes.
So the prapti bhava is that you decide that this existence, the form sphere or the sense sphere, you know, that sort of those spheres, and then the karma is playing its part. By the time of that taking those actions, like it's something like that, let's say you are a person who used to eat hoppers, right? And then the hopper man is shouting, hoppers and hoppers sort of thing, right? And then the karma bhava part is now claiming that it is mine, it is mine. Understand? Karma is the part that is actually claiming that one to be, it is mine, it is mine. Because your habitual tendency, I used to eat these things and that one. And then you are attached to that hopper in a way, right? Then you want to have it, you consume it. That is this upapapti thing, that there is a clinging now. The karma just constructed these things the way you wanted. The pleasure, you haven't eaten it. The pleasure and this perception, the volition and all those things. So these two things now, name and form, the consciousness, the name and form. It repeats.
Mm-hmm. That's what the problem with people living here. Always think about the food that they have eaten in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is about, isn't it? Because that
your habitual tendency.
Yes.
What I used to eat, I want it, mm-hmm. Right? And then when somebody is, now let's say you don't have it in your house,
mm-hmm.
and maybe somebody else's house, then the your habitual tendency produces that one. Now, this is the food that I used to eat in Sri Lanka. Even you probably can remember the first instance that you have such a tasty thing. And now having seen that one, then you claim that one to be mine, that I want it. Right?
Yeah.
So then...
But the problem here is that because people... with these habitual tendencies, people don't think that there is a possibility that they can go to the animal realm and the lower worlds, because people always think, human beings always think that we are coming back here,
mm-hmm.
and not, I don't think they even think that they are going to go to the heaven or somewhere, so they always think that this is where we are coming back.
Yes, because that we live for 50 years or something, mm-hmm. you know, whatever number of years they lived, so, well, I was here, now I'll be here, mm-hmm. And such a thing, so they can't see the impermanent nature, and unless you, either you will need to believe Buddha, what he said, oh, you should be able to recall your past birth and you should be able to see, well, I'm not belonging here. I was there before, and I'm nowhere at the end. There's no place for me, you know, that it's just going to the hell, going to that world, going to this world, and so on. So, it is this big. It's only someone with the higher concentration. like Buddha, who can actually see all these things, can tell and then see.
And again, when we look at the people, we all have different behaviors, isn't it? The way, from simple thing to a big thing, the way we perform these things are totally different.
Mm.
And why is that? There should be something
related to the past.
Related to the habitual tendencies, isn't it?
Yeah. Because remember that the 40 Dhamma path, we're talking about this regarding the nutriment. So one can go in a different paths given a same object. The certain things, some sort of bad quality that I have developed so strongly, go in that path. It's the natural flow, like a water flow in that direction. So
yeah, for a way, being attracted to alcohol could be something like that. One would see it.
Yeah.
One would not take it.
Mm.
Another person might take it.
Yeah. Or everyone actually get rid of that one only if they see Adi, the danger of that one. Mm. The alcohol or whatever thing it is. Now, if the tasty food is tasty and everybody is actually happy to consume it, but someone who knows about this, be careful, because he or she is touching that one as I'm touching a red hot iron plate, I'm going to get burned. If you do not know that one, this is red hot, then you grab it. That's the thing. And that's the value of learning this Dhamma. Since you know that one, then one would be careful. I mean, we would have consuming these things with utter craving if we do not know the danger of these things.
I was thinking on the other way, because we all learned the same similar principles when about hygiene, sanitation, and all these things. I was thinking on the other day that because when kids or people who eat something, somebody would eat something that is dropped on the floor, but one other person would take it and put it in the bin.
Mm.
Because I was thinking, because the same thing, two people who learn the same principles would behave in two different ways.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
I think those things are coming from habitual
tendency. Habitual tendency, yes. Habitual tendency, and that because of the habitual tendency, one would not actually understand that the same principle. The two different persons understand it two different way, because one who has got developed the wisdom, then he would see it differently, and then I should not do it this way, that this is bad. The other person, because of the craving or whatever thing, he does not get that thing into the mind.
And actually people do not have that kind of broad understanding, right? Most of them.
No. Mm. If the people got the understanding, then people are actually not behaving like this in this world or any other world. Yeah. This Dhamma is so difficult one to grasp. Get the meaning, unless someone with wisdom thinking about it. It's so difficult because of the craving. Craving closes. It's like a, banyan tree. Nothing grows under banyan tree. So the desires are there. Those desires does not allow one to penetrate the Dhamma going through that one. Yeah. Probably stop for today.